Chet Huntley, NBC News, New York.
And David Brinkley, NBC News, Washington. Russia's Deputy Foreign Minister Nikolai Furyubin is in India talking to Prime Minister Gandhi and is said to be promoting some kind of Vietnam peace conference. Before he went to India, Furyubin was in Hanoi, and presumably if North Vietnam were not interested, he would not have pursued it any further. India is chairman of the International Control Commission for Indochina and would be involved in a peace conference if there were one. The Russian plan is said for calling all countries involved to a meeting to discuss a settlement, an end of the fighting, and a withdrawal of all foreign troops.
The State Department expressed interest in reports of a new Soviet peace initiative on Indochina, but reserved further comment until it gets more information on the Soviet move. Privately, some U.S. officials speculated the Russians may simply be engaging in a kind of diplomatic one-upsmanship, trying to show that they too can be active in the diplomatic field following the weekend discussions between the United States and Great Britain in London. The Russians and the British are co-chairmen of the 1954 Geneva Conference on Indochina. On the other hand, the latest Soviet move takes on added significance because the Kremlin official who has been discussing it in India has just visited Hanoi. The feeling here is that Moscow will not undertake a new peace initiative, knowing that North Vietnam will reject it out of hand. As one official put it, there appears to be some stirring on the other side to show there's another way out of the war besides shooting, and we find that satisfactory. Richard Valeriani, NBC News at the State Department.
American and South Vietnamese forces attacked a North Vietnamese regiment near Khe Sanh in the northwest, and in 5 days, they say more than 400 communist troops have been killed. It was the first substantial fighting in Vietnam in several weeks.
North Vietnam's major port of Haiphong is a busy place these days. Since the loss to the communists of use of the ports in Cambodia, Haiphong has become increasingly important. Crates carry the names of factories in Russia, China, Poland, Romania, West Germany, and Czechoslovakia. Some cargo moves out by truck. But since the end of the bombing raids, many of the rail lines have been restored. The goods move freely, not only at night, but openly during daylight hours, without interference from the air. Judging from these scenes, operations in and around the port of Haiphong are virtually back to normal. This is John Rich, NBC News, reporting.
Secretary of State Rogers is back from a long trip out on the road and a series of talks with politicians in the paneled offices of government in 11 countries, mostly in Asia. In several of these conversations, he heard complaints the United States was not sending over enough money. In others, he asked the richer countries, Japan for one, to see if they couldn't find a little more of their own money to help their part of the world. On his return to these shores, Rogers went to the White House today to tell the president what he learned. And whatever it was, they kept it all secret. Chet?
Israel sent 36 warplanes over the Suez Canal today, and they bombed Egyptian positions the length of the waterway. South of the Sea of Galilee, an Israeli force attacked a Jordanian army base used for guerrilla attacks. One Israeli soldier was killed. Senate Minority Leader Scott said today that the administration may soon sell new aircraft to Israel, at least enough to replace those shot down. In Jerusalem, Israeli Foreign Minister Eban proposed talks with Egypt of what he called the most unofficial nature in the hope that these would lead to negotiations for peace. Real negotiations, he said, were the only way out of the Mideast conflict.
The Huntley-Brinkley Report is produced by NBC News and brought to you in color by Sulfadine, the medication that relieves dogs' frenzied itching almost instantly and helps heal sore spots quickly.
Jasper, why do you scratch so much? Do you have fungus itch?
Fungus itch, summer mange, hot spots, whatever. It itches awful. Flea collars, sprays, and powders haven't helped.
You need medicine on that kind of itching. You need Sulfadine. It relieves frenzied itching almost instantly. Sulfadine helps sores heal quickly. Hair grows back.
Man, you're right. I'm gonna live.
For your dog's frenzied itching, get the special medicine, Sulfadine.
J. Edgar Hoover issued the FBI's annual report today. It said the Black Panthers were the most dangerous and violence-prone of extremist groups, but that the Weathermen, an offshoot of Students for a Democratic Society, are a principal force guiding violence-prone militants. Also, he sees foreign influences at work in the Black Panthers. Michigan City, Indiana was calm today after two nights of racial disorder and police resumed their regular patrols. But 100 National Guardsmen were kept on standby duty in case of further trouble. In New Bedford, Massachusetts, where there have been four nights of racial trouble and one killing, that of a young black who was fired on from a passing car, the mayor appealed to the people to put down their guns or face search and seizure.
13 New Bedford policemen were hurt Thursday night as bands of young Negroes roamed the streets, smashing windows and looting stores. The first case of suspected arson destroyed a Masonic temple in the city's West End on Kempton Street in the heart of the ghetto. Barely 2 miles away, another suspicious blaze destroyed a building housing the Model Cities Agency. One fireman and five civilians were injured. Order wasn't restored until 3 o'clock in the morning. Mayor George Rogers told newsmen later that outsiders had incited the violence. Trouble continued through Friday night. Then on Saturday night, shots were fired from a passing car into a crowd of blacks. 17-year-old Lester Lima was killed. Three others were injured. Police have arrested and charged three white youths. Sunday afternoon, some leaders of the black community met with city officials, but the discussion went nowhere.
But we're not going to stand by and have our youth killed, our homes destroyed, and black people will always be in bondage. Amen. If we let this happen. Amen. But it's not going to happen.
After the meeting, the blacks left and a curfew was imposed again. Today, Senator Brooke of Massachusetts, the only black man in the Senate, visited New Bedford. He toured the area where the youth was shot, was jostled by a crowd of angry blacks, and then met with city officials to see what might be done. Recent studies show that blacks are moving into the suburbs at a rapidly rising rate. In 1968, one study discovered the black population of the cities was growing 8 times as fast as that of the suburbs. Now the rate is only 3 times as fast. But the move of blacks to the suburbs frequently is frustrated by restrictive zoning laws.
Mrs. Brenda Hudson, her husband, and two children live in Franklin Township, New Jersey. Mrs. Hudson works in the town of Piscataway, about 5 miles away. She and her husband must commute to work by car. They'd like to live in Piscataway, but a new zoning ordinance prevents it. Piscataway has a healthy job market. Big industries such as AT&T and American Standard have plants here. But it isn't as easy to find a place to live in Piscataway. Take these 40 acres of soybeans, for example. The owner of the land would like to build an apartment house here, but the new zoning law prohibits construction of any more multiple dwellings in Piscataway. In fact, the law says only one-family homes on one-acre plots can be built on this site. Mrs. Hudson would like to live here, in an apartment, because she can't afford a house under the present zoning restrictions. And so the white landowner and Mrs. Hudson and 12 other black non-residents of Piscataway have filed suit against the town. They charge that the new zoning law prevents poor people from living in Piscataway and that it's a way of ensuring segregation.
My children are approaching school age, and if I'm living where I'm at now and still working in Piscataway, it's going to create a problem for me. It's a problem already now because it's expensive to have to own and keep up the maintenance on 2 cars plus the gas. And it's a lot of transportation back and forth. It's a lot of commuting. God forbid if anything happens to my kids while I'm in Piscataway Township, it would take me a while before I could get to them. But if I could live in Piscataway Township, and I would look forward to it when my children are of school age, I will be within minutes of my job, almost within walking distance, you could say.
The zoning ordinance was passed by the Piscataway Town Council. Its members maintain that segregation was not the intent of the new zoning law. They say they just want a well-balanced community.
And I think if somebody can break zoning in any state, it leaves it wide open.
For what?
Well, for any kind of building. You can build a beautiful home here and a guy can come in and build a factory next to it.
For any kind of person, too?
Why not? If zoning is unconstitutional, for one, it should be unconstitutional for everybody. So if we tell you you can't build a factory here because it's not zoned that way, why can't you use the same term? You're being prejudiced against me and come in and build a factory. So you may have a house, a factory, a house, and a factory, if it got to that extreme. So I think when you challenge the zoning, and zoning has to be, you have to have a planned community, and there's no other way to develop and to prevent everything that these people want, really. I don't mean to prevent what they want. What they're after, the only way they can get it is through planned development.
The outcome of the struggle in Piscataway could set a precedent for integration in suburbs throughout the United States. But whoever wins this case, there's no getting away from the fact that the problems of the cities, racial strife and economic inequality, have now become the problems of the suburbs. This is Liz Trotta, NBC News, in Piscataway, New Jersey.
Housing Secretary Romney told a Senate subcommittee today that government housing programs of one kind or another are so numerous and so complex that they are holding building down. He asked for new laws as a first step toward a goal of 26 million new units by 1978.
I've come into your homes to tell you of something that's happening in our country, raisin exploitation. It's not funny. Oh, I don't mean the few raisins in fruitcakes or Danish. No, my friends, I speak of the greatest offender of all, post-raisin bran. They enslave a whole bowl full of plump, juicy raisins in every box. Look at them. So many victims, just like you.
Post, the more raisin bran.
46! Hut! Hut!
Some people call football kill the quarterback. I'm Roman Gabriel, a quarterback. I'm hot, sweaty, and thirsty. So I drink Instant Replay, the new thirst quencher that tastes better. In my business, I need all the help I can get. While I'm playing football, some clown is playing kill the quarterback.
The Huntley Brinkley Report continues. Brought to you by Silver Thins. Cigarettes are like women. The best ones are thin and rich. Silver Thins are thin and rich.
Cigarettes are like women. The best ones are thin and rich. Silver Thins are thin and rich. Thin so they taste light. Lighter than other 100s. Lighter than most Kings. Rich, well, because rich is better. Cigarettes are like women. The best ones are thin and rich. Silver Thins are thin and rich.
The Nixon administration has been saying the country's economy would improve toward the last half or last quarter of this year. This week, there will be a series of government economic reports on the gross national product, industrial production, housing, construction, and income. And they may give some idea or some hint on which way the economy is moving. Tomorrow, the president will meet in Louisville with the governors of 13 states in the Appalachian region to see if the government programs to help that area are doing any good. And on his way back to Washington, he will stop off in Cincinnati for the All-Star baseball game. In Washington, Senator Mondale's Committee on Integrating the Schools had on the stand today Jerris Leonard, head of the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division.
Assistant Attorney General Jerris Leonard said he enforces the law as it is and that neither courts nor Congress have yet decreed racial balance in the schools. But committee chairman Walter Mondale accused the administration of doing the very least the courts require and calling it desegregation, a policy he said was token and insulting.
Much work still remains unfinished in the task of obtaining and converting court orders into implemented plans. Specifically, practices such as racially segregated classes, or segregated seating within schools are clearly unlawful. These violations of constitutional rights cannot and will not be permitted to exist.
Let's begin, for example, with the school districts in Mississippi and Louisiana that are giving away property and who have yet been restrained from doing so. Let's begin with the 5,000 black school teachers that have been fired or demoted, principals that are now working as janitors.
Senator, if you will communicate that to the lawyers in the Civil Rights Division, there'll be immediate action taken about it. Senator, we're not crystal ball gazers. If a situation is going on that is contrary to the law and the court orders, and it's not brought to our attention, we simply can't know that it's there.
I don't think you need a crystal ball. I just think you need just a minimally acceptable set of eyes. Be glad to hear.
Is the senator suggesting that we ought to have a monitor in every classroom that has a voluntary or court-ordered plan? Is that what you're suggesting, Senator?
Well, I think you know what I'm suggesting.
Well,
I think you're suggesting that
we should put a federal monitor in every court classroom in all these 11 southern states.
When outrageous conditions are known and you really believe in a policy and the law is being violated, to just sit back passively and say, well, you have to wait till some poor black person who's afraid of being intimidated files an official complaint, I think is to hide behind a technicality at the expense of the school children of this country.
Some local courts in this country have 10,000 or more cases backed up awaiting trial. Many of them are automobile accident cases. Each driver hoping to prove the accident was the other's fault and asking for a settlement and a judgment. Often discussed now is a plan to eliminate all lawyers' fees and courtroom rigmarole and to have each party to an accident paid by his own insurance company regardless of who was at fault. Puerto Rico has now adopted this system.
Juan Alvelo, who was a salesman, drove a car in Puerto Rico for years without insurance. Then he had an accident. He broke his foot, a severe break, which will keep him out of work for 6 months. But Juan has little to worry about because under a new insurance program here, the government pays for everything. Traffic in Puerto Rico is a major problem. There is one car for every five people here, the sixth highest percentage in the world. The accident rate is also high, the death rate more than twice that of the United States. Before this year, only a fourth of the cars in Puerto Rico were insured, and 8 out of 10 accident victims received no compensation. Because of all this, the high accident rate, the lack of insurance, the masses of unprotected poor, Puerto Rico adopted a compulsory insurance program in January for everyone on the island. It's a program designed to compensate all accident victims without delay, without lawsuits, no matter who is to blame. The government pays all medical expenses. It pays death benefits up to $15,000, disability payments of up to $50 a week for 2 years. All that protection costs the owner of each car in Puerto Rico only $35 a year. And the system seems to work. So far this year, the government has collected more than enough money for all projected claims, and there'll be a little left over. Motorists get the insurance when they buy their license plates. The coverage applies only to bodily injury, not to property damage. Drivers can also buy private insurance, which protects them against court suits seeking damages beyond the government limits. But the basic coverage comes from the government, which moved in because private companies did not.
You know, industry, business has to follow the needs of the persons. And, you know, the insurance business is the business with the most dissatisfied customers all over. As a result, this approach at least will have basic protection immediately after an accident, when the person really needs to have hospital bills disability benefits and the rest of the protection.
Juan Alvelo would have been ruined financially by his accident. A half year off the job would have wiped out his savings and forced him deep into debt. Now all his medical expenses are paid. He'll get $50 a week until he can work again. The family of Juan Torres Guzman, who was killed in a head-on collision a few months ago, is another example. This family, 12 children, 3 adults, will get nearly $11,000 in death benefits. Without the new law, the Torres family would have received nothing. Puerto Rico is only the fifth place in the world to adopt such a program. The others are Norway, Finland, Sweden, and Saskatchewan in Canada. Officials here think they have a good program, one that could very well serve as a model for the United States, where some of them believe the no-fault system is inevitable. Charles Quinn, NBC News in San Juan, Puerto Rico.
This is our top model, the large capacity machine.
Don't believe a word of it.
Now, you bought one of our 18-pound washers last month, Mrs. McWinnie.
It doesn't wash any better than my old machine.
Did you use the new dash I gave you? Now, did you?
Will you please tell me what difference a detergent makes?
Well, it makes a lot of difference. Now, look, your bigger machine washes 50% more clothes. Now, that's a lot more dirt. You need a detergent concentrate.
He says that, and I don't even know what detergent concentrate means.
New Losuds Dash. New Dash is a concentrate.
It doesn't look any different.
Oh, but it is. It's nearly twice as concentrated.
He's right. It feels concentrated.
Dash puts a lot more detergent in its detergent. That's why it cleans this well.
Don't your clothes get this clean?
No, but they will. Right, Mr. Purdy?
Get new Enzyme Dash. Dash gets the best from the big machine.
Thor Heyerdahl and his 7-man crew arrived late last night in Barbados after a 57-day voyage across the Atlantic aboard Ra II. Heyerdahl said it proved the Egyptians could have sailed to the New World long before Columbus. Heyerdahl's papyrus boat put into Bridgetown at about 6 p.m., towed in by a government tug. The explorer said that the voyage had showed not only that the Egyptians might have made the trip thousands of years ago, but that people of various nationalities, like his crew, could work together. Heyerdahl and his men stepped ashore to the cheers of hundreds of spectators. The voyagers were tired and worn, but cheerful. Heyerdahl said, without elaboration, that this trip was the end of the road for him as far as expeditions were concerned. More than 150,000 Protestants marched through Belfast today, carrying banners and playing fifes and drums to celebrate winning the Battle of the Boyne 280 years ago. 20,000 British troops and police were mobilized and two water cannon were flown in from West Germany, but there was no trouble. Prices were mixed today on the New York Stock Exchange. The Dow Jones Industrials gained more than a point and a half, and the price of an average share lost 2 cents. On the American Exchange, an average share went up 3 cents. Trading on both exchanges was light. David?
Much of the talk now about environment and pollution is in the realm of high theory, not related to such immediate human concerns as jobs and grocery money. Here's a case that is. In Southern Virginia, a factory decided it could not continue making a chemical product without polluting the river, and so it'll stop making it, and some of its employees will lose their jobs.
This plant of the Olin Chemical Company has made soda ash for 75 years, providing about the only employment in the little town of Saltville, Virginia. The plant also has dumped hot waste salt water into the Holston River for 75 years. Now the Virginia Water Control Board says the company must stop polluting the river. The company says it can't. It will have to close the plant instead.
All technological avenues have been explored over several years by all manufacturers of soda ash by the Solvay method. It is technologically infeasible, or impossible, actually, to accomplish this.
There's no way you can do it?
None that are known at present.
Personally, I don't know what'll happen. We have a lot of people that
They've been here most of their lives, and they don't have a trade, any skill. And these kind of people, I really feel sorry for.
Because I know there'll be men here that won't be able to find work. I reckon they'll just have to fall back on the state.
I own a little farm, I own property. And I could make it, I guess.
I don't know what a lot of people will do around here if it does close.
Saltville is nestled in mountains of limestone. Beneath it is a great natural salt deposit. These are the two ingredients of soda ash, an industrial chemical used to make glass. The plant was built here because there's so much salt and limestone here, and because there's the river to carry away the dirty waste. The plant has been Saltville's only reason for existing. 2,800 people live in the town, and 900 work at the plant, someone from almost every family. The plant also pays the town and county $250,000 a year in taxes. If the plant closes, there is nothing else to keep Saltville going. Nothing.
Well, that's so serious that all the stuff that you're looking at right now could well be like one of these coal field towns that I'm sure you've viewed. It could happen.
Just a ghost town, turn into a ghost town?
It certainly could, but we're asking that the tolerances be set up to a standard that we could continue to live with.
In other words, if I understand you right, you wouldn't mind a certain amount of pollution in that river if it would mean the plant could stay open and continue to provide jobs for your residents.
I think you knew the answer to that before you asked it.
Is the answer yes?
Sure.
There will be many salt bills in the campaign against pollution. When there is no practical way for a plant to stop polluting, someone will have to make a decision to allow some pollution in order to save men's jobs, or to kill jobs and towns in order to stop pollution. Ron Nesson, NBC News, Saltville, Virginia.
Good night, Chet.
Good night, David. And good night for NBC News.